So, I guess we're talking about Shavuos, Sukkos. What's on your mind? Hey, what's on our mind? We wish we'd all be sitting at the Seder, or maybe after the Storim. I don't know exactly. But anyway, I just say a few words, and then we could open it up to some conversation. I'm sure that that could be very interesting. I think that traditionally, I say from thousands of years already, the Pesach Seder has been the most fundamental expression and basis for everything that we believe in. The existence of a creator, the creation, and his control over all of the chukai shamayim v'aretz, all the rules and laws of nature and creation, over our personal lives, over everything that takes place in this world, the nisim gluyim, the blatant miracles that were witnessed by millions of people in Mitzrayim, on the Yam Suf, and then recorded in the Torah, a document which was expressed as eyewitness testimony. Atem ra'isem asher asisi b'Mitzrayim. Zochor asayim hazer sheyutzosim b'Mitzrayim. A document that speaks to the first generation themselves. They pass it on to their children, not as hearsay, but as a document that says that we witnessed these events, and it's been passed on accurately, fanatically, without any changes throughout over 3,300 years. And that's the foundation of everything that we believe. And the Pesach Seder is the opportunity to convey this message. But our Torah is very practical. Although we have many words and we make many speeches, we know that the most powerful tool for conveying a message is reliving it, acting it out, so to speak, experiencing it ourselves to the extent that sometimes we even wonder, was I really there, or did I just hear it? But it became so vivid; it was so real. It's a living, dynamic experience, and that, of course, has assured the survival of our faith, so to speak, throughout the millennia. When you think about it, it's mind-boggling. Jews all over the world, for thousands of years, and even today, and in the previous two generations where so many have drifted, this seems to be the one time where they all get together and they all recite more or less the same story and eat the same or similar. Our masses cost a lot more than theirs, you know. But it's amazing throughout the world. This has been going on year in and year out without interruption for over 3,300 years. So it's truly a unique opportunity to strengthen everything that we believe. The question really is, and especially for those of us with younger children, how do we really involve them? Well, I think the schools are doing a pretty good job about that. They probably come home with more junk, more props and things that you eventually have to throw out, but then you can imagine, you know, this project and that project, they come in with frogs, and they come in with this, and they come in with who knows what. And it's really, and they're all Haggadah with it's really beautiful in a sense. And we have to see to it that we keep that involvement going, because in school, it was theoretical. The power of the Seder is that's an anniversary celebration. We find in Chazal that when we celebrate and we relive on the anniversary of an event, then it takes on a whole different sense of meaning. There's something mystical, there's something spiritual about it. There's something real that just, we can really feel it. So whatever they heard in school is very important, but we want to make sure that the Seder is that experience that solidifies it, that actualizes it, that makes it truly real for them, as if it was really, as the Haggadah says, to Chayav Adam Liras Esatzmu, Kilu Hu Yotzim Mitzrayim, as if we ourselves went out of Mitzrayim. That poses a challenge, because some of them have had, I mean, again, depending on the age group, but some have so much to say that we'll never get to the Knedlach, that's for sure. You know, like, they don't stop, and you don't want to stop them, you have to stop them. And there's other kids sometimes, and they also have what to say, and so it becomes a balancing act and a challenging experience. But we have to try to, as much as possible, involve them. And that's really what it's about. It's not about mumbling up the words of the Haggadah, which, you know, theoretically, there's parts of the Haggadah that are absolutely imperative, but there are other parts that are appropriate and should be said. But talking to the kids and letting the kids relive this experience so that it's indelibly imprinted in their minds, in their hearts, that the Klal Yisrael were in Mitzrayim, and through the greatest of miracles, beyond anything we could imagine, we were redeemed to freedom, and through these miracles we came to recognize Hashem as the Creator, because Adam HaRishon was created at the end of creation, and nobody ever witnessed creation in action until the millions of witnesses that saw it happening in Mitzrayim with all the makas, and with the specific makas going to come, and that it's going to end, everything called through Moshe Rabbeinu, through Hashem. And all of this adds up to such an amazing chizuk, and we want our children to have as much of it as possible. I would like to just add one dimension to this, which I think can be very helpful. I remember the first Seder that I had with my future wife, with my caller's family, in Eretz Yisrael, as shortly after we were engaged. And my father-in-law was an individual who in 1940 crossed all of Europe, miraculously. It was a time when people weren't traveling and not traveling freely, to get to a boat in Italy to get to Eretz Yisrael. And he had a series of, I think it was like 10 mamish miracles that happened. And he started to tell his story. I must admit, we forgot about Mitzrayim, we forgot about Paro, we forgot about Moshe Rabbeinu, we forgot about the Makkos, and we were in 1940 in Europe and experiencing the live events that this individual experienced. What was it? This was almost 70. This was 30 years before, whatever. And maybe a little more. And it was like so real, because Ramban says the trick is, from the miracles, the blatant miracles, the public miracles, to be able to see through them, once we see Hashem's involvement in every minute detail of our existence, to see the hidden miracles that take place in our lives. And that's really the ultimate taking it down to earth, because this is not just an historical event that we're trying to relive. This is an inspiration to open our eyes to the miracles that we see on a daily basis. And therefore, whatever we can do about sharing, or them sharing, these personal hashgacha protes, these personal little miracles that happen to them in their lives, happen to us in our lives, or even happen to our parents and grandparents, when something that people that they know, and it sort of it takes it full circle, and it makes it really, really communicates it. But we must remember that the essence, besides the eating of the matzah, but the essential mitzvah of the night is v'higadu tola bincha, is focused on the children. And it's the message that they get, which is critical, that we give them. And it seems very clear from the Rambam that part of the reason for that is because when we tell our children, we strengthen ourselves, because we don't lie to our children. And when I find myself telling my children all of the details of these miraculous events, in reality, I'm strengthening my own emuna. I'm reliving it myself. It's becoming more real in my eyes because of the fact that I'm giving it over to my children. So these are some general ideas that I think are very important. We have to find ways to keep them interested. In the times of old, you say they used to give out nuts and other things for the kids to play with. Today, we're a little more sophisticated than just giving out walnuts or something like that. Who knows what these kids have to play with? But it's important to think, to prepare, and to really make it an exciting event. I don't know. I mean, the specifics, I guess, everybody designs on their own. Many families have taken to this idea of preparing a whole skit together to make it come alive, you know, and each one has their role, and each one, I don't know. But the idea is get them involved and get over the message. This message, this is the foundation. In fact, the Seder night is the foundation for our emunah throughout the year. Every day, we're told we have to remember Yetzias Mitzrayim. But the posuk that tells us to do so is based on the V'higadu tola bincha, zochor esayom asher yetzosim mitzrayim, on the anniversary celebration. It's almost like from celebrating this event on the anniversary of the event, we draw strength to be able to remember it, and it becomes more and more real throughout the rest of the year when we remember. And since this is the foundation of our belief system, this is the foundation of our sense of obligation to Hashem, because He took us out of Mitzrayim and everything He did for us, and that there was a purpose to bring us to Har Sinai, to give us the Torah. So all of this becomes like the foundation for everything that goes on during the year, and therefore it's a very critical a critical event. I think maybe if there's some comments or questions or whatever, maybe...
What about for those of us who just got married, have like babies 6 months old or younger, or are at our parents' table? How do we do the mitzvahs v'higadu tola bincha, if that's me mitzvah of the night?
Well, I don't know about 6 months old, and I really don't remember how old I was, but it may have been 3 or 4, I don't know. I remember sitting, my grandfather taking me on his lap and telling me all about Meiser Rabbeinu. Now, I had no idea who he was talking about. I never heard of Meiser. You know, that Litvische, it's Moshe. But as they used to say, the Litvische, Meiser, that's the way they spoke. Who is this Meiser Rabbeinu? I barely knew who Moshe Rabbeinu was. But it's a memory that I have today, and I'm not going to tell you how many years ago that was. So these, even for a little kid, there could be vivid memories. You talk, six months old, but I'm, you know, a little bit older, a year old, and you know, they know something, and they sense something. And also, the enjoyment that they have creates a receptivity for future seders, future storim, because I remember it vividly. You know, if you survey people, non-religious people especially, what festive meal do you remember more than anything else? And they'll tell you it's the Pesach Seder. Some people say their wedding. Some people don't say their wedding. But the Pesach, it leaves a roshim. I'm still seeing now in my grandparents' house. I said, it's different from my eyes. And when we have pleasant memories, even later on when we learn things about the same time about the same subject, it connects with the Girsa of the Yankas, or with the original pleasant memories that went in at the youngest age. So no matter how old, I mean, as long as you can talk to them, something, it's very important. That the singing is also very important. It makes it, they enjoy it. They, you know, I don't think I'd be up for that part already, but...
And for those of us that just got married.
What's that?
For those of us who just got married or married less than a year.
Okay. Enjoy it while you can. You know, as Hashem, look, you know,
is there a message or something we should be thinking about? No, but the
point is to take it seriously. To me, the most powerful aspect of everything is every Jewish family throughout the millennia has been doing this on this night. And again, even non-from Jews, so they have the Maxwell House Haggadah, and they have the Manisha with wine, and they got the, I don't know, this matzah and that. They got something, but it's, there's something there. Maybe they have bread on the table too, but there's some, this is mind-boggling. There's nothing like this in the whole world. That it's at the same time, the same date, everybody sits down to tell the same story. It's powerful. Even as a young married couple without children, but just we strengthen each other, and the inspiration that we have will do us well to eventually pass it on to our children. Yeah, please.
I don't know if this is like a random question. Why is the this like biggest night all about Yetzias Mitzrayim and not like the other like Hanukkah and Purim, why it's Yetzias Mitzrayim?
Well, this is where it all starts. As the Ramban says, first of all, the only eyewitness testimony to creation, as I mentioned, happened in Mitzrayim. So already this is the beginning. We now know there's a creator. And we now know that the creator, there's no detail too small for the creator to pay attention to. If, you know, all of the Midrashim, a Jew and a Goy are drinking from the same cup, and he'll drink water and he'll drink blood. And it's in the same room, it's dark and it's light. It's like, and so this is the foundation. This is creation, the creator, his creative powers. And this is the personal involvement with each and every individual, which is critical. And then it's the basis of the Klal Yisrael became the Ummah, the nation, through this process. We went into Mitzrayim as a family, we came out as a nation. So this is really our beginnings. And beginnings are always important, you know. We look back to our beginnings to really see what we're all about. And that's why Hanukkah and Purim, these are later things that happened in Golus, critical. Hanukkah about the spiritual survival, that the Torah will always survive despite the worst odds and attempts. Purim, the physical survival, that with a threatened annihilation of the entire Jewish people, and here we're still here. But this is the roots. You know, go back to your roots. The roots started in Yetzias Mitzrayim. That's really the foundation. And that's very important to convey. That's why it's so fundamental, because it's the basis for everything. Yes.
I feel like when it comes to cleaning for Pesach, there's the two types of people. There's the people who are like, the vote is just to look for chametz. If a dog wouldn't eat it, it's not chametz. And then there's the people who like, it turns into like spring cleaning and like doing the attic and the garage. And like, is there value also to that part of like really getting into all the details? Like, does that become part of the mitzvah of cleaning for Pesach? Or like, is there a value like knowing what's the chiyuv, and then if I decide to do extra, like call the kavod?
Okay, that's a very interesting question. I would say the following. Pesach is the only time that we find that the forbidden activity, or forbidden food in this particular case, is forbidden not just to be eaten, not just to be have hanoah from, but to be owned, to be seen. Bal yiroh, it doesn't really mean to be seen, but we're not allowed to have it in our possession. We're not allowed to own it. And the Torah goes to great pains to keep it far, far, far removed from us. And the idea is to, the Sefer HaChinuch explains, the idea is to realize how important this event is. So I believe, for example, I remember as a kid growing up, I had a friend, or he was actually a friend of a friend, that he used to go to school on Pesach with ham sandwiches on matzah. I remember that very, it was a kid, it was 10 years old, 11, I remember, ham sandwiches on matzah. And I in my mind, I guess years later, I came up with this, I imagine that came from the fact that the previous generations saw their grandmothers crawling on the ceiling to clean chametz, and there's never any chametz on the ceiling. Well, I don't know what your kids do, but there's never any chametz on the ceiling, and that's absurd. There's no obligation whatsoever to do such a thing. But when they saw the extreme to which people went, that gave a sense of this stuff is really important. And the message is so critical that we go. So therefore, I would say that, yes, a person doesn't have to go, you know, it's spring cleaning is not one of the, in the Hilchos Pesach, you don't find anything about spring cleaning, that's true. On the other hand, when we're extra careful, it says something about how choshev it is. What's very sad is that with all that extra cleaning and that concern of how important it is, when we sit down to the Seder, we have a different sense of how critical and how important this is. The problem is, for the people who were doing that extra cleaning, by the time they sit down to the Seder, they can't even keep their eyes open to enjoy what's taking place. So, you know, that's the balance that you have to... Yes?
So I guess that during the Seder, I've always struggled with like a certain feeling. We learned a lot. I did in school. They're supposed to be feeling like the Sheba, like in.
I'm sorry, I get a little loud.
I like always struggled with like in school. We always learned that you're supposed to be feeling the Sheba, like you're supposed to be feeling the pain and the suffering of Klal Yisrael in Mitzrayim. Whenever I'm reading the Haggadah and going through it, I'm always like trying to understand like what does that mean? You're supposed to feel it. Like of course you feel pain because it's Klal Yisrael and to your fellow Jews, but what is like an appropriate, like what is a good mindset to get you into that appropriate feeling of pain? Like is it, should I be thinking like back to labor? Should I be thinking children dying? Like what should I, like what is it that, like,
so that's a very good point. Today, I mean, nobody can count that high to know how many Haggadahs there are printed and how many, I'm not talking copies of the same one, but all different ones that every year there's one guy, actually he sent it to me to look at it. I don't know if it's published. He came out with this, with the Haggadah in rhyme, in English rhyme. No, it was very cute. I thought it was a very good idea. Really, you know, for kids a little bit older, could really interest them. And he really captured the essence of, I read through it, he captured the essence of it in rhyme. So, you know, it's something different. You know, if you come up with something different all the time. So anyway, I don't know if that's available, if that's published, whatever. But what I think is that there are so many midrashim that describe individual circumstances, incidents. You know, in the world of fundraising, it used to be you send out a letter to raise money and you tell about the massive programs that you have, and we have 2,000 people that are involved, and we have this, we have that. In the last 50 years, they learned a lesson. Put one story, a tearjerker, in there and don't talk about all the massive stuff, because people relate to something specific. Everything else is statistics. Everything else is big. It's too much. You can't grasp. You can't, you know, get your brain around it. So if you choose some, it's important to prepare before, or for someone to prepare before. If you're preparing the kitchen, then the husband should prepare at least to say that. But that to have almost tearjerkers, almost like one or two graphic stories which say more than Avodim Hayinu Lefarav Mitzrayim. Eved, Paro, Mitzrayim, it doesn't mean very much to me. But when I have, you know, look what happened. This is what they, I mean, I don't know which ones come to mind, and some of them come to mind are too much to burden you with now. But there are certain things, they did terrible, terrible things. Terrible things went on. And amazing miracles went on. So rather than Dom Tzfardei Akilim or of Dever, but one example, you know, I mean, it's trite because everybody knows that, but a picture, in Makas Dam, a Jew and a Mitzri drinking from the same cup. From the same cup, it's exactly the same. You can see through it. What it looks like on the outside, I don't know. He's drinking blood and he's drinking water. Just a picture like that. One of my favorite pictures, I found a Medrash once that said during Arbe, the locusts devoured the plant life. So it says like this, if a Jew and an Egyptian were partners in a tree, you know what they were doing being partners in a tree. Now, if the Jew owned the roots and the mitzri, the branches, then the branches would be devoured and the roots would remain intact. If the mitzri owned the roots and the Jew the branches, the roots would be destroyed and the tree would hang in animated suspension because it belonged to the Jew and the Arab couldn't touch it. Picture something like that, if you can believe it. It's true, but it's, you know, you got to take something that also is something they could, it's not too much. If it's too far out there, what are you talking about? You don't care. But like these things, and if you select, it's very important to prepare. If you select relevant pieces that can be specific, that can be graphic, that can be exciting, that can be grasped, I think then you have some, you know, because the words of the Haggadah are very general, you know, and this is the Midrashim fill in with specifics which could be very relatable. And they really, in one or two specifics, can make the whole piece, you know, come alive. Yeah?
My question is sort of the opposite of hers.
I'm sorry, could you just
a little? My question is opposite of hers, but how, there's a lot of pain we could be stuck in, and how did they get out, and how do we get out, and the ones who weren't good enough were left there. So like, how did they get out, and how do we get out? There's just too much pain of the
Gullus. So much?
There's a lot of pain.
Pain,
And it's relatable if we bring it to our own current circumstances. And how did they get out?
What do you mean, how did they get out?
Meaning Hashem took them out, but yeah, they weren't deserving. They were deserving. What did Klal Yisrael do to get out?
Well, so first of all, that's very important. It says that before they got out, the schus that they had to actually go out was the bris milah that they did, the dam milah, and the dam korban pesach. And they put the dam korban pesach on the doorpost. It wasn't that the malach hamavis or the malach has to know. They could know without it, but it was a sign that we did something. We, you know, they did it. They brought a korban pesach, and they did bris milah, which they hadn't done. So they had these schusim. Chazal also say that it's b'schus noshim tzidkoniyus nigel avaseinu mimitzrayim. It was the schus of the women, the righteous women, because when their husbands were working in the field, and imagine that, you know, in the heat and the hard work and harsh and oppressive, shoitrim on top of them, and this, they would bring them food, they would bring a shmata and wipe their brow and give them something to drink and console them a little bit. And that was a schus, that because of that, they were zeichet to leave Mitzrayim. Chazal also say that despite the fact that in Mitzrayim that they got involved in, even in, they were caught up somewhat in the Avodah Zorah, but they didn't change lo shinos malbushim, not their clothing, and not lashonim, not their language, and not their names. So they did certain things which provided them the schus to be able to get out. We also find that those that really weren't worthy didn't get out, you know, during Makas Choshech, that they disappeared so that the Mitzvah wouldn't know, wouldn't think, oh, the Jews are also getting a plague, but they would not zeicha to come out. One thing which I think in a little bit in line with what you're saying is there's a beautiful Tosfos Rid. The Tosfos Rid has a Haggadah, and on the piece of the Haggadah which says Mitchila Oyvdei Avodah Zorah Hoyu Avoseinu, that they started out as idol worshippers. Terach was an idol worshiper, Avraham Avinu's father. So he asks a question. He says, "We thank Hashem for taking us out of Mitzrayim. If He wouldn't have put us in, He wouldn't have to take us out. What's the big deal? What are we so thankful for? You know, I'm hitting you over the head like this, and then I stop. Oh, thank you for stopping. You know." So he says like this: "Mitchila oivdei avodah zorah hoyu avoseinu. We started out as descendants of Terach, and as such, something genetically would not have allowed us to earn all of the privileges and all the gifts and all the Torah and the mitzvahs and everything that Hashem wanted to give us. So he put us in Mitzrayim, and we went through rough times there. And because of that, chasalei, we had rachmanus. And with rachamim, we were entitled to earn things that we never could have, to get, things that we never could have earned. We never could have, because of the fact that we were descendants from Avi Avad Zor, technically, halachically, and legally, so to speak, we couldn't do that. But he gave it to us. He gave us, put us in difficulty. So many times we find that we go through difficulties, and the purpose of those difficulties is to take us to a point where we become entitled to benefits and blessings and opportunities that we never could have had in the first place. I think this is an important message. By the way, I find this message is so consoling to so many people. When people are going through difficulties and they consider the fact that Hashem may be putting me through this because he wants to give me beyond what I could ever deserve. And therefore he makes it this way. And he has this system where you didn't earn it, but you it's like an entitlement. Entitlements you don't earn. Entitlements because of a certain reason you're entitled. Suffering is an entitlement. I don't know if you people have ever come in contact with Holocaust survivors, but I used to hear from many of the Holocaust survivors, used to see people with their, the numbers on their arm and say, "Es kommt mir." It's coming to me. What's coming to you? I suffered. Well, I didn't make you suffer. I don't owe you anything. No. Es kommt mir. It's coming to me just because I suffered. There is such a thing that it's like suffering is a certain entitlement. And Hashem has entitled us to get it. Look what we are. I mean, if you think about it, it's mind-boggling. There is no rational explanation for why we are here today, why we are alive and well, why after throughout a history, the last 2,000 years in Golis, and before that we had our share, and still around, still practicing the same mitzvah, still studying the same Torah, and the Klal Yisrael is around alive and well, and the Torah remains identical and alive and well with us to this very day after thousands of years. It's mind-boggling. It's only because our history has entitled us, even beyond what we may deserve, in order to be able to survive, to and to maintain this, and eventually, hopefully greet Mashiach Bekorev.
I have a question. I don't know if it's so relevant, but I struggle with this in general with my kids, but the amount of materialism that is nowadays, and it's like they have to come in and like they're waiting to like get a gift because they know that like, oh, we're gonna stay up and negotiate a gift with our father or grandfather. And then the whole idea of also like Motzei Pesach, this pizza rush that I don't understand, because I never eat pizza twice a week, so I don't know why everybody's running to the pizza store after not eating pizza one, for a whole week. Like, how do we balance that for our kids and really focus on like the right part of Yom Tov for the kids and not this rush to the materialism?
I'm a dissenting opinion in this issue of materialism. People decry the materialism and they say it's the cause of so much trouble and so many problems and so much jealousy and so many challenges. And it's true. But I believe that the more serious issue is exciting our children about the spiritual. The more that we have a spiritual connection, the more that we have a spiritual existence, the more that we have a spiritual life, the more we realize how important, how fulfilling, how uplifting, how happiness-provoking our spiritual life is, the less we become dependent on those things. People could run to eat pizza and this, that should be our biggest problem. But frankly, a person who's spiritually connected, what's a big deal? those things become less significant in our lives. In terms of the Seder and in terms of the reward, the presents that they get, that's something that's an age-old tradition. I don't think anyone had in mind the kind of things that our kids are getting these days. But Lemaisa, that's something that keeps them awake and that keeps them excited, and that's important too. This night, these nights have to be etched in their memory as just wonderful experiences, thrilling. Even if they don't get the message yet, the connection, as I mentioned before, with the positive connection will, in the long run, have a very, those pleasant memories are very powerful. Okay.
Could we discuss the difference between Emunah and Tefillin?
Oh.
or part of it as it pertains to Pesach?
We could do that very succinctly. Somebody once summarized it and said, Bitochen is Emunah in overdrive. I don't know if that really describes it. I'm not even sure I know what overdrive is, but that's besides the point. But what I think the way to look at Emunah are the basis, the things that we believe and we know about Hashem. We know His existence. We know His power. We know His kindness. We know His love. We know His involvement with every aspect of our existence. We know His control and His total capabilities, that nothing is beyond Him, and all of the other things that we know about Hashem. And that's Emunah. That's our, we call it Yediyah, it's knowledge. It's Emunah, it sounds like belief. Like it's not, a leap of faith is a Christian concept. There's no room for leap of faith in Judaism. This Yetzias Mitzrayim has shown us that there is a creator, that He is all powerful, that He gets involved with minute details, that He cares about us, and that there's nothing that's beyond Him and all of that. So that's the knowledge that we came out of Mitzrayim with. Bitochen is the ability to emotionally internalize this to the extent that I feel at peace and confident that Hashem is going to, in fact, help me. It's David HaMelech expressed this very beautifully in Kapitel Yud Gimel. Vani b'chastuch obotachti yogeli b'bishuasecha. I trusted in your chesed, which means I know the chesed Hashem. I know you're all powerful. I know you're Malei Chesed V'Rachamim. And I trust that. I trust that I'm relying on your Chesed to help me, to take care of me, to do everything that's good for me. And then it says, Yogei Libi Bishua Secha. Therefore, I know my heart will rejoice in the Yeshua, in the salvation. I'm not trusting that you're going to help me. I'm trusting your Chesed, which I know through my Emunah. And now, since I have such confidence in your total chesed and your love, and of course your ability to do everything, that adds up together that I just have this feeling you're going to help me. And that's where the bitochen comes in. So bitochen is taking the emunah and applying it emotionally. It's taking it from here to here, from the mind to the heart, and applying it in my own life. I'm hopeful. I refuse to give up hope. I'm at peace. I have meluchas hanefesh because I know you're going to help me, because I know you're in control of everything. I feel it. It's not just intellectual knowledge. See, I can have intellectual knowledge and still be a nervous wreck. If I'm a nervous wreck, then my emunah has not translated into bitochen. But if I have bitochen, it's in His hands. He's in control. He's taking care of it. And since He's so full of chesed and rachamim, I just know it. I just sense it that He's going to take care of me too. That's like very briefly, succinctly. But it's emunah bitochen is a world unto itself. The Vilna Goin writes that the ikar nesinas haTorah liYisrael hu kedei sheyasimu bitchon of Hashem. The ikar of the giving of the Torah to Klal Yisrael is that they should put their bitochen in Hashem. So this bitochen stuff is very important, and of course you can't have bitochen without emunah. That's the lashon of the Rishon. They say kol habiteach ma'amin. If you trust Hashem emotionally, then you have to believe in Him and all of His powers. But lav kol ha'ma'amin b'yiteach, not every believer has bitochen shemagorem achet. I'm not worthy. I'm afraid I'm not worthy. But the Baal bitochen rises above that. You know, even if I'm not worthy, I know Hashem loves me, He cares about me, He's going to take care of me. And it's something emotional that just comes from within. And that's really another long discussion. That's like, that's about hours and hours and hours.
So you can work on a Muna and that will bring to...
Well, it does help, but you have to take it from here to here. Once you have that emunah, and then the emunah has to be, and therefore I can rely on Him that He's going to do all these things. So, and then but maybe I'm not worthy. No. I just, he's not gonna let me down. He's so full of chesed, he's so full of kindness. I just feel this sense that he's not gonna, it's not easy, it's complicated, but it's worth it. This Beis Halevi that Oswald published is a tremendous thing. And, to learn that, we've done it many times. It's clear, it's succinct, and they did a very good job. They broke it up into chapters, which are like paragraphs, you know, very, very small, and it's a tremendous power. Mm-hmm. Oy vey. I brought stuff that I wanted to give out, and I left it in the car. One is a little booklet about Bitochen, and the other thing is just about the Seder. Maybe I'll leave and I'll just bring it back. That's something that's worthwhile.
Is it easier if someone gets it for you?
What's that?
Can someone get it? Should someone? Get
no, I'll go. I'll go to my car and then I'll bring it back here. Okay.